In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, there was Paul Brown.
Paul Brown transformed the game.
Hello, Paul Brown here. Welcome to the first ever International Browns Podcast.
Happy New Year, Cleveland. Wow, what a day yesterday. New Year's Eve went off. I'm here with both co-hosts. I'm here with Jack Duffin and Ian Wright. Jack, wow, this is your moment.
I didn't think it was coming, but it's happened over the moon. It needed to be done. It's just... We were going in the wrong direction, wasted a lot of resources, and interesting. Good luck to Freddie, nice guy, but it didn't work out.
Ian, how do you feel about Dorsey going, mate?
I think Dorsey was the shocking one of the two. I think Haslam came to a realization that the future direction they want to go would be harder to get there with Dorsey. I don't necessarily think that he wanted to get rid of Dorsey. I think he really appreciates and respects his evaluation of football talent, but at the end of the day, the future direction of the Browns didn't include John Dorsey, and he chose to not take a lesser role, so they agreed to mutually part ways.
And Jack, how do you feel about that, mate? Because I know that you had your views on Dorsey, but how do you feel about that Dorsey actually walked out the building, if I'm correct?
Yeah, so it was really interesting to note that the Browns wanted to keep John Dorsey. They just wanted to change the way the front office works. A lot more, I think, collective decisions and take some of his power away, because he was basically given free rein to do whatever he fancied. And I'm not going to lie, I was expecting a really successful season this year. I thought the first 2-3 years of Dorsey, we'd see a lot of success, and the issues were going to come sort of in years 4, 5 and after that. So it was a surprise how bad it went. So, yeah, even though I was banging the drum for Dorsey to go, it wasn't so much based on what he was doing now. It was the fact that it was screw us in the long run. But the front office has decided there was no plan. We discussed it all on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. Talent acquisition is fine, but if there's no plan and no idea and you're not building towards something, and when you're in an all-in strategy, you've got to be winning. And we weren't. And it's as simple as that. You go all in, promising the playoffs, expecting potentially a Super Bowl, and you go 6-10. It was good night, goodbye.
Jack, you mentioned the restructure. Just explain to us, like, why you think the Browns want to or need to restructure, because I classically see that Dorsey's the GM and you have a GM running a team. You know, why are the Browns now changing that structure?
Obviously, the Haslams just weren't happy with what John Dorsey was doing. It might have been to do with the fact that we'll come on to Di Podesta. Di Podesta's banged the drums for two different head coaches. It didn't go his way. They probably thought, actually, this Di Podesta guy that we're paying money to, probably a pretty wise guy. Maybe we should listen to him a little bit more. Maybe they didn't like the moves John Dorsey was making, the trades, maybe the OBJ one. I don't know what the thing that sort of tweaked him. It might be more than that, but the Haslams decided they needed to tweak and move it around.
Ian?
I think if we keep it simple in the sense of for the Haslams to be driven to make the change, they lost a form of trust in John Dorsey. Whether it was the idea that he maybe didn't run the most wide-range coaching search last time that brought them Freddie, there was something deceptive that he did. You know, I know that it was out there on the OBR report that D. Haslam thought there was a little bit of sketchiness, a little bit of deception going on from Dorsey. And I think what ultimately happened is when they looked at the end of the year and said, we've let him, like Jack said, have free reign. And it was pretty much chaos in the building. I mean, there was not a lot of effective communication. You know, a lot of the things you need for a robust organization weren't there. That's why they wanted to curb that power structure, which ultimately led to his departure.
Jack, go on, sorry.
just on the chaos, there was a piece I was reading today. It's from The Athletic. Basically, before the games, Monckton was walking around chatting to the opposing coaches, just saying how much of a mess the team was. The quote was total mess. And then just basically saying, look, we've been working on all these play calls from Wednesday to Saturday. And then Freddie just calls a completely different game on a Sunday. So, the dysfunction was rife. And Tom Monckton's definitely getting fired for saying that. So, you can believe that. You cannot go around and tell opposing coaches that.
Jack, that's a really good point. What's next for our OCDC and special teams coach?
It wouldn't surprise me if Stefanski,
Mike
special
Prefer.
Teams coordinator stays. Did a good job this year. I was impressed with how we did. Haven't had a chance to look at the Football Outsiders numbers, but it's all going to depend on whoever comes in. They've got their guys. We'll get onto who they are and everything there. Mike Prefer, thanks for that, Ian. And it's one that we'll see what happens, but the new head coach, that's their decision. But I could see him staying.
Ian, your views?
Yeah, they'll conduct their exit interviews, which they did probably last week, and then they'll sit down as an organization, especially I know Elliot Wolf staying in the building. What they'll do is they'll give permission for all of them to seek other jobs. I know that Steve Wilkes' name was linked with Ron Rivera, and he went a different route and took Jack Del Rio. So ultimately, each coach will be given the opportunity to take interviews. But like Jack said, the new coach can come in, sit down with either Prefer or Monckton or Adam Henry, Stutt Mitchell, whoever they want, and offer them a position. That is a possibility.
I'm really surprised, though, that the way that Freddie Kitchens went a couple of days ago and then Dorsey went 2 days later. I was expecting it maybe to do together.
I think it's partly because they wanted to keep him. It wasn't a sacking. And that's the important thing to remember. It's, I think, mutual part in a way is probably a fair way to put it, because they wanted to change. He didn't want to change the setup and he decided to leave. So I think that's fair. If it would have been a sacking, yeah, they'd have probably done them both at the same time.
What's next for Dorsey, Jack? Do you reckon there's a dream position out there for him, or do you think he'd just reflect and have some time off?
I think teams have got to look seriously about what they're getting. It's obviously twice now he's been let go because it hasn't worked out. So I can't see him getting free rein in a team again. I think if he goes in, it'll be part of a wider setup. He will still be the GM, but he won't get complete do whatever you want. Or it might be the time where he's going to take a few, certainly next season out the game. It might be his last gig. I mean, who knows?
Ian, what's your view there, mate? Do you think Dorsey will take a year out, or there's a dream job out there just waiting for him?
I think there's a new trend now at the NFL, especially where some of these old GMs, they can't step away from scouting. I mean, they're natural born scouts. They love it. They eat it up. I have no doubt John Dorsey in a couple of weeks will be in Mobile, Alabama. I have no doubt in a couple of weeks after that, he'll be at the Combine, the Senior Bowl, all of them. So he might do like a consulting team, a consulting gig where somebody will bring him on and say, John, you are an exceptional evaluator of talent. We would like to pay you for your scouting services. So he may not be a direct member of an organization, but I definitely think he'll draw a 1099 paycheck from some team because he does have an ability to spot talent.
It's going to be so interesting to see what happens now with the infrastructure. Do you think the Browns start going after head coach first? Do you think they go after this GM first? How do you think they're going to do it, Jack?
So Paul Di Podesta is leading the search, and we're more or less at the point, I think, we've cut it down to three, and it is a GM head coach combo. They are looking for the pair. So these were names. I had the same three, and Ian had exactly the same three all paired together. So we're looking at Andrew Berry coming back from the Eagles as the GM alongside Stefanski as the head coach. Then you've got Wolf staying in the building and Mike McCarthy coming in as the GM. No, it's not as GM, as the head coach. And then you've got McDaniels coming in as the head coach and Ziegler most likely as the GM. You could do Caserio, but I think it's more likely to be Ziegler. So that's the pairings. The one that I'm not sure it'll be is Stefanski. I know that's likely to be one DePodesta really likes because he pushed for him last year, but I can't see Haslam signing off on a first-time GM, first-time head coach again. So I think that might be the one that doesn't happen.
Ian, what's your view on them three?
Yeah, as we talked before the show, I think that is the three-horse race. To Jack's point about Stefanski, the thing about Stefanski is he's never coached before. So Mike McCarthy, obviously, and Josh McDaniels have coached. Now, McDaniels hasn't been a coach in, I think, about 10 years. But you need somebody that maybe understands. So while I don't think that Stefanski would be a bad coach, the problem the Browns have is you have a short two-year window where before Baker gets money. So there's two types of rosters in the NFL. There's one with a rookie quarterback and a ton of overpaid vets. And then there's one with an overpaid quarterback and a lot of young cheap talent. So the Browns are on that verge of converting from one type to the other. So you have a two-year window to maximize the value in that. And if you don't do it correctly, you're talking about wasting the last 3 years. This year was a waste. Next year is going to be a waste. And then potentially if you make the wrong hire, you could be looking at a decade of infutility if you don't make the right hire. So I think McCarthy-Wolf is the safest pick because, A, McCarthy's been a coach for a long time, and Elliott Wolf has a great understanding of the roster, the talent. As we know, he scouted Taki. You know, there's a lot of guys on this roster that he had his hands directly involved in. So I think of those three, I think Wolf McCarthy would probably be Haslam's first choice, just given that experience.
And one name we haven't mentioned is Alonzo Highsmith. Has he officially left the building yet?
Not officially, but it sounds like it's more or less a done deal. He's not staying here.
Yeah, there was rumors that he was going to take a job out of the University of Miami, which is his alma mater. And at this point, I had seen that he had turned that down and wanted to become an NFL GM, wanted to stay focused on that. Him and Elliott Wolf are very good friends. I would say Zoe's kind of a wild card. I mean, obviously, great evaluator of talent. You know, I think if Elliott Wolf and McCarthy stayed, I think he could maybe find a role doing something, but at this point, nothing for sure has been put out there.
One question on one thought I had was your man, Podesta. I thought that he was just like a quiet guy, maybe just kept going to be polite, but he's actually got a huge pull within the Browns organization.
Yeah, it's incredible how surprising it was because we were talking a year ago that is he even going to stay after the draft? What is his role in the team? No one really knows. And so it was one that we'll see what happened, but he's come and had a greater role. They obviously started looking at some of these things. He came out with Carson Wentz isn't, I think he was a top 10 quarterback. Oh, I forget what the number he came out with. True. We should hire Sean McDermott. True. Stefanski is better than Freddie. True. He's made a lot of right calls. So I don't think he was listened to much in the last sort of since Dorsey came in. But he's certainly getting things right. And if we go back to the leaked guardrails, lots of the stuff that goes into that, that the Browns were doing when Sashi was here, but then stopped happening a bit when John Dorsey arrived. It wouldn't surprise me if it is Berry and Stefanski that this is basically the we've had a 2-year detour and then we're going back to the original Sashi plan. Not tanking, rebuilding or anything, just continuing to be a lot smarter with our moves and not be quite as short term.
Ian?
John DePodesta, the man, the myth, the legend himself in Berea. Oh, yeah, that's right. Paul DePodesta. I don't know. John Dorsey. They're merges of two. The thing that I think most people don't understand about Paul DePodesta is who is Paul DePodesta and what does he do? Because the Browns have not really made him available to the public. I know he sat up there for one press conference one time, but his role with the organization is a chief strategy officer. And, you know, for those that aren't familiar, a strategy officer is in charge of basically four pillars of an organization, the development of an organization, setting forth the plans, the strategic initiatives, you know, those type of things. So, for example, when Sashi Brown decided, when they decided several years ago that they were going to do a tank mode, acquire all the draft capital, you know, not one that the Raiders have done and the Dolphins have done. Those are the type of things that DePodesta would have looked at and said, this is the easiest way for us to get where we want to go in the shortest amount of time. You know, the other one is communication within the building. And I think maybe this is where Dorsey probably differed from a lot of them because, you know, his job is to make sure that all of the communication in the building is effective, efficient, and collaborative. So as Jack mentioned on the guardrails that leaked out, one of the things he specifically wrote on there was do not silo. Do not silo information. Do not withhold information. Make sure that the information is disseminated throughout the building. I would almost wonder if Dorsey probably siloed a little bit. He's the type of guy to me that would probably do something like that. So then it comes down to execution of strategies, of draft management, you know, when to take players. And that's where this perception of analytics comes in. Analytics is simply making decisions based on statistical information. That's really all it is. So, you know, people that say, oh, Bill Belichick uses analytics. You know, I know that Dave Gettleman called them computer nerds or computer dorks or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, he just doesn't understand. He actually does it. Like, when you go for it on fourth and one, you're using statistics and analytics to make that decision. You know, whether you want to credit with a bunch of guys in suits, that's up to you or not. So executing a strategy is ultimately what DePodesta does. And then the sustainability of that strategy. So is this something that's set up for long-term success? Which goes back to the guardrails. Here are our key positions. Here's how we communicate. Here's the pillars of talent acquisition in both free agency and the draft. How do we retain talent? All these are pillars of sustainability. He's not looking at a right guard and going, oh, this guy's footwork. That's not what he does. I heard a lot of people talking yesterday on Cleveland Browns radio about, oh, is this guy going to be involved in football decisions? No, he has never wanted to be. He's never asked to be. He has no desire to be. He is about strategically putting in plans that are going to set the organization up for long-term success. It is a very boardroom strategy. And as we know, Jimmy Haslam is a very boardroom guy. I think that's why he's been able to really garner the attention of someone like Jimmy Haslam. And that's why his power is now expanding in the organization.
What we like on the timeframes, guys, to get this GM and head coach in, do you think it's going to be 1, 2, 3 weeks, months? Jack, any idea when you think we'll see something?
I reckon they'll aim to have something done in the next 10 days. They'll interview these people. They'll probably shortlist it to two and do a second interview. But the issue is you've got to move quick because other teams are going to start signing them. So the longer you wait, Mike McCarthy might be signed to the Panthers. Someone else might go somewhere else. So you can't hang around. Where it was last year, the Freddie was the favourite. He's internal. He wasn't interviewing anywhere else. There wasn't too much risk. They might do an interview with someone and really like them. But there's a lot of names they're interviewing. So if we just run through the list of what's out there. Got Josh McDaniels, Pat's offensive coordinator. 49ers defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh. 49ers pass game coordinator, Mike LaFleur. 49ers run game coordinator, Mike Daniels. Got Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. Green Bay Packers, former Green Bay Packers head coach Mike McCarthy, and Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman. You've also got Kevin Stefanski, who is the Vikings offensive coordinator. And the interesting one was Matt Rhule, who's the Baylor head coach, declined the interview request from the Browns. He's going to interview with the Giants instead. It looks like he's off there.
Ian, anyone there that you would particularly like or anyone there you want to keep well away from?
Well, the one he didn't mention was Urban Meyer, who I know Jimmy Haslam is allegedly has an affinity for. Initially, when we talked on Sunday night, you know, my worry with Urban is about the transition. The one thing I will just tell you is if Paul DePodesta sits down with Urban Meyer, he's going to be blown away because a lot of the things that Urban does from a strategic standpoint align with the guardrail stuff And that type of strategic approach is going to be very attractive to somebody like Di Podesta. I don't necessarily think Urban's going to want to interview, but I would just tell you, if Urban did, he would blow that away. And as far as I saw, so Mike LaFleur, obviously the brother of Green Bay coach Matt LaFleur, was with the Browns as a, I believe he was an intern with the Browns on the 2014 staff with Kyle Shanahan. Mike McDaniel, who was the wide receivers coach with the Browns in 2014, just understands offensive football. He's a young mind. I believe he's 32, though. You're talking very young guys. And from what I've seen today by Ian Rappaport, the Browns brass, when they go to Santa Clara this weekend, are only interviewing Robert Saleh. So something to kind of take a look at there. Roman, I'm not interested in him. I know he's done wonders with Lamar Jackson. But as I've said on Twitter a couple times, the skill set differences between evaluating somebody as how good they were as an offensive or defensive coordinator is not the same as a head coach. And we'll get into a little bit and maybe some of the differences that I see there. Stefanski, I worry he's just too raw, hasn't managed the locker room. And then you could run into the same situation with Freddie, where it's like, here's all these really hardcore personalities and Odell and Landry and all these guys, and you've never done it before. You know, it's going to be hard for him to get up in front of the room and say, guys, I'm super smart, but I've never done it before. So I think that might be a tough thing.
Yeah, I think the interesting point is, whereas if it's a player we're talking about who we should draft, we've got a lot of tape. We can see what they do. We get their measurements. We get their combine stuff. So we can have a really, really good feeling. And you can go, oh, we should draft this player over that player. We should take Baker over Josh Allen. That stuff's really easy to know. With this stuff, it's near enough impossible. I said it last year when we were discussing Freddie. We just don't know. You've got to decide, do I trust the people running the search to make the right call? And your answer can be yes or no. And did I have full confidence in Dorsey? We didn't know. It was the first time Dorsey had ever hired a head coach. Do I have more confidence in Di Podesta? Yes, I do. Because the last two, certainly better calls than what we ended up with. So third time lucky. Hopefully he hits it on the head again.
I want to twist it from another angle now. How do you feel the Haslams are doing in their decision making to make these fast changes, Jack?
They've been horrendous. The issue is they keep jumping from plan to plan to plan. So we had the Sashi plan, and then we ditched that after 2 years. So we had the John Dorsey ideas. I'd hold off on calling it a plan, ditch that. We've basically gone back to Sashi-esque planning, if it is Berry and Di Podesta. So it's almost like, hey, we got that one wrong. Let's go back to that. So they need to decide what they're doing. It's been messy. And yeah, they've been right to get rid of Kitchens and Dorsey, in my opinion. They were right. They should have obviously ditched Hugh earlier. The sackings haven't been quite wrong, but they need to stick with the plan and let it play out.
Ian?
You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, this process is going to be run by Paul Di Podesta, and then the Haslams will have to make the call. And I think the Haslams have failed in several areas. You know, the Haslams have tried to arrange these marriages between, you know, entities, whether we want to try to arrange this GM with this coach and this coach with this GM. And Albert Breer made a great point yesterday, and he goes, look at all of the Browns' arranged marriages and how bad they've just absolutely imploded. So the one thing that I think we may look back at this is, you know, Dee Haslam talking about deception from John Dorsey. And then all of a sudden, Ian Rappaport comes out and says there was a little bit of a league feeling that John Dorsey in the interview process wanted Freddie Kitchens and didn't make it as fair of a fight, you know, for the job as they thought. Well, if I'm an owner and you came to me with all this information and made me select Freddie because it was a little deceptive in how you presented that information, I have a problem with that. So the one thing that's nice about Paul Di Podesta, every single interview is going to be conducted in the same fashion. He's going to obtain the same information. It's going to be a very regimented approach. Now, I will warn you, this is probably going to be a more unique interview than any of these guys get in other teams. And, you know, a lot of times a question will leak out or a guy will come out and say, well, that was a different interview. Because I'm sure a lot of people out there understand when you go for a job nowadays, they make you take tests, you know, their personality questionnaires and stuff like that. Di Podesta is a strategy officer, is going to basically imply an interview strategy that is going to determine what type of person you are as a leader. You know, a lot of times people measure your empathy levels, low empathy to high empathy. A lot of times they measure your ego. How high of an ego do you have? How low of an ego? And what that does is that quadrants your personality into, are you an effective follower, a leader? Are you a supporter? It's going to categorize you. So the one thing the Haslams are really going to appreciate, I think, in this process is every single candidate is going to get a very fair, consistent approach at the interview process. And ultimately, to answer your question before about time frame, if it's McCarthy and Wolf, this could get done as, I mean, McCarthy's interviewing tomorrow. Wolf's already under contract. So this could get done within a couple of days if they want to keep McCarthy. And then Barry and Stefanski play this weekend. You know, so if their teams lose, we could realistically have a decision within the next 10 days on them. McDaniels and the New England, they're not Tennessee could very well beat them. So I think this may be shorter than we think, but if it's ultimately Haslam's call and he really likes the McCarthy-Wolf combination, just based on that leadership type of quality, we could know feasibly within a week.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it's Berry that they happily probably let him leave during the season, because it's not like he needs to do anything. So he can just come straight over. They won't want him there too much involved in the college scouting, because you don't want him scouting if he's going to leave.
Here's a question. Do you think Barry wants to come back?
I think to get the opportunity to move from his current position to a GM, it's not something he can say no to. He obviously worked with DePodesta, so the bond seemed pretty good there. So I think he'd be up for it. It's 2 years and he could be sacked again, but you ask anyone in football, they want to be a GM if that's their position, because it's an opportunity not many people get. There's only 32 jobs in the entire league, 31 if you discount New England. If you get the opportunity, you take it.
In your view?
I know that the Haslams are very fond of Andrew Berry. You know, Mary Kay's put that out there several times. I have no reason to think that that's not true. Andrew Berry was always a very professional guy. I have no doubt that if he were to even come interview, that means that his respect for the Haslams is reciprocated from the respect they have from him. You know, so if you're bringing guys back into the building, you know, obviously if you worked for a guy that was an asshole and they asked you to come back, you're going to say, no, absolutely, I'm not going back to that. So I think it's telling that if Andrew Berry does get come over and interview for the GM position, that he's very fond of the Haslams.
All right, guys, we've got less than 5 minutes. Anything else you want to discuss? I've got one quick thing I want to mention is, has this been on the cards for a while with Dorsey? Because we just haven't seen him for the last 2 months. Jack?
He's disappeared since he had a video with you. So there's rumours that you were basically like the assassin. Because I even read a piece where you were quoted in it, and talking about waking the sleeping giant.
So am I basically Zane Gonzalez that got rid of Hugh Jackson? I got rid of Hugh, Dorsey.
Well, to be fair, after you saw him, he was never seen again in public. The writing was on the walls. I reckon you cursed him.
Ian?
As much as I'd love to give you credit, Paul, I will just tell you, it's probably, I believe you saw him at the Denver game, right? Which was October. John Dorsey was likely at a lot of college games. You know, that's when the college season ramps up. A lot of your conference games happen. I would almost guess that the football guy that John Dorsey is, he was probably just attending a lot of college games throughout the week, doing a lot of scouting. You know, the end of the football season, pro player personnel, you know, and if you think about it, we had so many injuries. They were probably just scouring through other teams trying to find bodies to get out there. That bottom half of the roster was just churning so much. Honestly, do we really need to hear from Dorsey after they lose to the Steelers? I mean, I don't need to hear from those guys. They're going to give you the same BS speak every time they get up there. Fans make such a big deal about those press conferences. They literally say nothing. So as much as I'd love to give you credit, Paul, I'm sure John Dorsey was just working.
Well, there we go. Jack, I like your response, Bear, mate. Thank you. Got 3 minutes left, guys, and I want to finish up by saying Odell Beckham is in Miami and he's partying with P. Diddy. I've seen him on Instagram looking like he's having a great time and his hips are moving excellent. Do we think that Odell's going to need injury repair on for like 6 months, and is he going to be traveling Europe for the next 6 months and then just rock up May, June, maybe even August, ready to play football. Jack?
I reckon both him and Jarvis will probably end up having surgery, I think. I haven't read the pieces, haven't been that up with it. But yeah, they've got their one last season probably together. So next year, they're going to go out and have a great time. Make the most of it, because they'll never get the opportunity again, probably. So good luck to them. Have fun. It's a great friendship there that's been there for a while. So yeah, one last season. Go out and enjoy it.
Do you reckon the wide receiver coach is probably the safest person in the building at the moment?
I didn't think he did very well this year, so I think I was really excited about him. It wouldn't surprise me if he's not kept, because you saw like Odell lining up in the wrong place at times. There's loads of mess. So I think Adam Henry's probably out.
Ian?
I think Jarvis and Odell may have been given a little more liberty than they were initially afforded. I think Adam Henry could have done a better job keeping them under wraps. And my guess is they probably have both injuries that'll keep them out just through OTAs, drive Tony Grossi crazy, and they'll be back in time 6 to 7 months from now in time for training camp.
All right, Jack, where can people find your details, mate?
It's at Jack Duffin on Twitter, D-U-F-F-I-N. Everything's done there. DM's always open. Any cap questions, feel free.
Ian?
At Ian19 on Twitter. And thank you, Paul, for coming across the pond. I know we had a good time in Cincinnati. So thank you, you know, for coming over and meeting all those people and having such a good time.
Excellent. I just want to finish the year off by confirming, I've got it in my inbox, Joe Thomas is coming on the podcast. So to do the 500 episode.
That's awesome.
Good Go time. Browns. Guys, thanks a lot for keeping me up to date with what's been going on over the last 48 hours. It's been an absolute crazy time. And guys, I couldn't do it without you two. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for keeping us along. And it's been an absolute blast.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Depot. Depot.
Oh, Depot. Depot.
D-E-P-O. When Dorsey goes, but sir. Anyway, all right, guys. Take care. Speak to you soon.